Today, from the Wings Archive.
The fundamental relationship of the society is the relationship between men, women, and children, and it is shaped by money.
Selma James, co-founder of Wages for Housework.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Selma James is one of the founders of the Wages for Housework campaign, an international network of women, women's organizations, and men who demand that all unwaged work be quantified, valued in terms of its benefit to capitalist economics, and paid. This includes domestic caring work, community volunteerism, and unwaged work in agriculture. In 2011, James published a book called Sex, Race, and Class, The Perspective of Winning, as part of the celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Wages for Housework campaign. The book is a selection of James's writings from 1952 to 2011. I'm Kelly Romaris Watson. On April 3, 2012, I caught up with the 81-year-old activist at a private home in San Francisco. I started our interview by asking James about how her philosophy had evolved over the years.
I haven't contradicted myself, but I certainly have broadened my view, broadened my understanding of the work that women do and the work that men do, and absolutely the work that children do. I think that's where I've changed most, because I'm far more aware of how much children's work is crucial to the survival of the human race, especially in countries of the non-industrial world, which doesn't have water coming into their homes. And the people who get the water on which life depends are often children.
You speak about the distinction between class and caste. What is that distinction and why is it important?
The definition of who is the working class has been very narrow and confined as it's been talked about by the left. Not by Marx, by the way. Marx had a much broader conception of who the working class was than the left that calls itself Marxist, because he understood that, for example, women and children, whether or not they worked at the so-called point of production, whether or not they were in factories doing waged work, that we were all in the working class community, an important part of the working class and of the survival of the working class, especially women in relation to children, even though both they and the men were in factories. And I think it's very important, not merely important, absolutely crucial, to talk about the divisions within the working class, that is, the different sectors within the working class, because those divisions, the divisions of power among us, which is expressed almost always as the division of money, of wages, and of access to resources, are exactly what keeps capital in power against us. The divisions, for example, between women and men, and the fact that women are often very dependent on men's wages, not only when we are entirely unwaged, but also when we go out of the home to work, our wages are so low that we again look to men to supplement our income fundamentally, and we get them to supplement our income by working to reproduce them, that is, working to make their lives more livable and doing caring and service work for them. And that is the fundamental relationship of the society, is the relationship between men, women, and children. And it is shaped by money. And it is tremendously important to spell that out and to undermine that hierarchy, which is the foundation of the capitalism that we want to see the end of. But it's not only between women and men and children. It is also between the industrial and the non-industrial world. It is also between various races. And so you have what Marx called a hierarchy of labor powers, which we know very well. That is, that white men make more money than black men, and black men make more money than black women. And in fact, whether white women make more money than black men, or vice versa, has been the movable part of the wage hierarchy, but black women always made less money than both, and immigrant women always made less money also than black women, unless they, of course, were immigrants as well. So the undocumented are a crucial part of the wage hierarchy because they're the ones who can be most exploited. And to look at that racism not as a moral infirmity, but as the way we are politically divided and economically divided is absolutely crucial in determining how we're going to struggle to get together. Because, of course, unity is what we want. And you can't discuss unity unless you discuss the divides among us in great detail, because whether we have less money or more determines how we live, how much work we as women do in reproducing people, in caring for people, raising children and helping our aged mother, or being the aged mother doing the child care of the younger daughter and granddaughter. How we relate has to do with how many resources we have, how much wages we have, and how much we have to do the work of being poor. You know, people don't know how much work it is to be poor unless they're poor. How much we travel around looking for the bargain. How much we have to eat the same thing day after day, and, oh, Mom, do I have to eat this again and deal with that? How much we have to get the clothing together that the child will appear in at school and not be laughed at or be bullied or in some way think that they are less than other kids. Those are crucial life problems that are not often discussed, not even in the women's movement. Friday is payday, but Thursday is a lean day. Thursday, you have no money for the cigarettes that get you through the day, every day. I was a single mother, and I had to decide every Thursday whether I was going to buy milk or cigarettes. And I often bought the cigarettes because I thought, I will be less bad-tempered for my kid, and it's more important that I be good-tempered than that he have milk. I wanted him to have the best, as I was taught the best was, and I had to choose that the best was for me not to be grumpy. And so I spent the money on cigarettes. I've quit 30 years ago, but that's a detail. Caring for everybody when you don't have the resources or the finances is soul-destroying. And that kind of relationship with your child, that relationship with the economy, and that kind of work, that terrible, I think, tragic work, being poor, has to be counted as the work that most of the world's women do.
On Wings, you're listening to Selma James, co-founder of Wages for Housework.
I am in favor of pay equity, and not only pay equity between women and men. We have to fight for pay equity on a world scale so that we don't have runaway factories, because where they run away to, there's the same wage that we have, not less than we have, and not undermining us. You know, China, 300 and something thousand people a year die from overwork in China, and that's the standard that the US and the UK and other European countries want to impose on us.
if you're talking about actual wages rather than just a metric for statistical purposes, who would be paying this wage?
We are fighting for that money to come from the military budget, which is why our slogan and the summation of our political perspective is invest in caring, not killing. We want caring work to be waged, all caring work. If men do it, they certainly should get the money for it too. And we want the military budgets to shrink, not the services, not the social wage, not welfare, but the military budget. That's what we want to shrink, so that the care of people, animals, the planet, that caring is what is valued in the society rather than killing. Some years ago, we got the ILO book of definitions on what is work and who is a worker.
The ILO is the International Labor Organization, an agency of the United Nations.
And you know, mothers are not workers, but soldiers are. Soldiers are considered workers. I mean nothing against soldiers, because I just want them to take off their uniform and drop their gun. But with the gun in their hand, they are considered to be productive. But the mother, no, she just makes human life. She just cares for it and tends it and helps it to grow and nurses it and educates it and trains it and makes society by making people. But that's not work, because the market says it's not work. And so the market is really governing our lives and governing our thinking and governing how we spend our time, which happens to be our life.
David Corton of Yes Magazine says money is a control mechanism, and I think it reinforces not only capitalism but patriarchy. Isn't really the answer not so much giving unwaged workers a wage, but doing away with money? Because the more you get into money, the more you get into capitalism.
Is that what you would tell men?
Yes, I'm a demonetarist in favor of abolishing monetary systems, moving to gift economy, resource-based economies, things where maybe you use barter but you don't use currencies for all jobs.
If in San Francisco domestic workers are getting $10 an hour, are you proposing they take less?
I'm proposing everybody do away with money.
Where do you start?
I would say that you start in places where there have been disasters that have wiped out the traditional economy. For example, Haiti after the earthquake, Fukushima, New Orleans after Katrina. People could have started up among themselves ways of providing each other with goods and services without the use of money. We actually already do that among our circle of family and friends. We often give and take from each other without exchanging. So actually we're doing these sorts of things already. I don't think we realize it enough.
Well, this is not my view. Let us start with Haiti. I was there when President Aristide came back, and everything was in very short supply, except NGOs. They were in big supply, and they got all the money and wouldn't give it to anybody, whereas Hillary and Bill Clinton were anxious to lower the amount of money paid in the sweatshops. That was an important part of what this great feminist was offering to Haitians. You should have seen the expensive outfits that the UN occupation forces had, the enormity of the guns, which could have bought so much that people needed, beginning with food and water, and the uniforms they wore, and the 4x4s that were armored, which they were driving in, and everything in the feelings and bodies of the people I were with were, can we not take the money that is going into the occupation, that is going into military control of these revolutionary people who are suffering so much from the earthquake, and before that the hurricane, and before that the other occupation that was caused by taking their president, their elected president, away from them? Cannot this money be given to food, clothing, and shelter? I am not ready to tell them that they should take less money. I am ready to support their efforts to end the occupation, to end the exploitation, and to end the sweatshops, and first of all by ending that they are sweatshops. And I think it's very nice to speak about the end of money, and I definitely work towards that myself. But the end of money will begin when we take the money from the banks, not from the worker. And we give the money to the worker, then none of us will need money. But as long as the banks have it, as long as the military has it, as long as the UN troops have it, I want it for myself, and other women want it for themselves, and the Wages for Housework campaign will campaign to get it from them.
How do you get the money away from those bankers and soldiers?
The first thing you do is fight for welfare. And there's a bill now in Congress, the RISE Act, which says fundamentally that welfare should be reinstated for single mothers and that people can rise out of poverty by welfare being reinstated. And that's what the fight is about now. Once that bill is there, the fight is between every single budget that the government and the opposition will put forward about whether we'll get some or the banks and the military will get all.
We have right now these Republican presidential campaigners who are basically arguing that freedom lies in being on our own and doing everything ourselves, and if you've got a church that'll help you, fine, but don't come to our taxpayers, meanwhile using taxpayer money for war. What do you think of the way this country is going with this personal isolationism?
What a good phrase, personal isolationism. I think that's an excellent way to describe what they are proposing that we do and how they are proposing that we live. You know, Margaret Thatcher, often called a feminist too, like Hillary Clinton, said that there's no such thing as society. And what she really meant was, as when I am finished with British society, there will be no such thing as society, because we will put people against each other. Personal isolationism describes what she aimed for when she said there's no such thing as society. And in fact, what we do when we get together as a movement is to reinstate the society. We make a society by coming together to demand our rights and our resources and our wages. And as women, it's tremendously important that our work be validated by our access to money, which we really strongly believe should be called a wage, whether it comes as welfare or as Social Security. Because, you know, we older women, we don't retire. We just tire, because the work continues until we drop. So, yes, the fight is on between our society and their individualism, which they foster in us and which we reject by building a movement.
Do we have to get them to understand what Elizabeth Warren, who's running for Senate in Massachusetts, said, that nobody gets rich alone? What do we have to do to get people to understand that?
Well, it's not that those who have, they understand very well what they're doing and with whom they are doing it and against whom, exploiting whom they are doing it. It's not understanding they need, it's a kick up the backside.
That group, yeah. But like people, let's say in these Tea Party movements, the grassroots workers, a lot of whom are women,
yeah.
You know, that hold up signs that say, get the government out of my Medicare. They vote against their own interests.
They do vote against their own interests. And that's because in a period when people feel very weak, they say, if you can't beat them, join them. And that's a lot of the Tea Party. But something else is happening in the society. That's not the only point of power. Increasingly, beginning with the Arab Spring and the rebellions all over North Africa and the Middle East, and continuing with the occupation of Wall Street and the Occupy movement internationally, that is creating another point of power, and I think that it will have a great impact on the Tea Party. I think that those Tea Partiers who are truly grassroots will begin to doubt the side that they've chosen as our side becomes stronger.
If women rise up, like Hillary, like Margaret Thatcher, to play the patriarchal game, what do you dismantle first, the patriarchy or the capitalism?
You build a movement. To me, the patriarchy and the capitalists are one. Doesn't matter if women and or men are leading the patriarchy. The patriarchy is the exploitation of the grassroots. And there's only one thing you can do, is to build a movement. And we as women must build a movement that is independent of the powers that be, independent of the police who don't investigate rape, independent of the left who always thought we were marginal, independent of trade unions who were never for pay equity, some of them were, but very few, independent of every political party who sought to get our vote but took our power. So we have to be independent. We have to be anti-racist. We have to be for the working week for wages to be reduced. Men should know their own children. Men should have time to know their own children. Men must become carers because we want them to have a full life. So the working week must be reduced. We have to build a movement for this. We have to make it clear that we as women don't want to work a 40-hour week outside and then another 40-hour week over the weekend, the evenings and mornings before we go to work. We don't want to sit and do work and not know what's happening to our children. It's not whether we do the patriarchy or capitalism. We do the movement and we take them all on, and they're all interconnected.
Why is it, do you think, that caring work is paid so low or goes unwaged altogether, while destructive work like designing weapons of war gets so highly remunerated?
Because the work that is done in the munitions industry or in other destructive industries has an immediate profit for them. They pay so much in wages and they get so much back in value, from which their profit comes. But our work at home, they have been able to leave the reproduction of the human race to us and not pay for it, not even support it, often undermine it, and we have no choice but to try to keep ourselves alive, and that's very profitable for them, and they don't have to pay a penny for it. And then when we got them to pay some pennies, when we got some services, when we got some health care, when we got some welfare, when in every industrial country but the United States we got some family allowance, the U.S. is the exception, they said, no, that's too much. We now have defeated your movement, and we have given big jobs to some of the women. We now are going to cut the welfare state. We're now going to take back what you have been able to win. And there's no way to deal with that except to build a new movement. And Occupy is the absolute spearhead of that. I'm very thrilled about it. I know it has great problems. And I know the power relations between women and men is not solved in the Occupy movement. I know that very well. But it's a base. And it's a hub that all kinds of people can come to and make their struggle, draw out the connections between their struggle and the struggle of other people. And I think that the horizontalism that sometimes, very often, is one of the hallmarks of the Occupy movement is not enough. We have to know that the world is not socially horizontal, and we cannot be democratically horizontal unless, and this is very important to me, we address the power divisions among us. I think that that's urgent, and we have to find out what women's voice is within Occupy, and we will find that out when women organize autonomously within Occupy. There has to be a clear difference between autonomy and separatism, so we can be stronger and more united, but always on the basis that we have our own autonomous movement, that we have our own independent voice to contribute to what we are gathering together as different sectors. In terms of identity, I think our identity is fluid. You know, we're a waged worker one minute and an unemployed worker another, and we have to be flexible in terms of what our identity is. But in terms of what work we are doing and what we are entitled to as human beings who are productive of society, that is universally the need. And as we organize independently, autonomously, we spell out every one of our connections with each other and against those who are exploiting us.
You're listening to Selma James, co-founder of Wages for Housework, interviewed by Kelly Ramirez Watson.
As women, we're used to understanding that nature goes in cycles. I mean, we as women have periods. Men see things as linear, which is not sustainable on our planet. When are we going to figure that out as a world?
Well, I think that a lot of people now know that it's not sustainable for human life, for animal life, or for the planet, for all of us to be working so hard to produce what we don't need. And they're organizing for the work week to lower, and for some industries just not to produce, and for oil not to go around exploring for more oil. We know what that means. We know it means the death of the planet, the death of life on Earth, and we know that their greed is suicidal. It's not rational anymore what they're doing, and we have to spell that out. That's what our movement, our women's movement, has to be saying, because the ecological devastation, it's women, the farmers, who feel it most. It's women, the carers, who feel it most and who feel it first. We women have to make the case for life, and we can do that because our work is life. We want men to be working for life with us to make this planet the utopia that we as human beings need and that the planet needs in order to heal from the terrible pummeling it has had from 500 years of capitalism.
That was Selma James, one of the founders of the Wages for Housework campaign.
Legendary feminist theorist and activist Selma James was interviewed in 2012 by the now late Kelly Ramirez Watson. As of 2024, James is 94 years old. Find more about her and her writings on Wikipedia and on the website globalwomenstrike.net. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose recent events can be viewed at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.